It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump. Caleb Hatch in the driver's chair, taking us home on this hump day. Coming up this hour, Tony East, Lock On Pacers podcast, is going to join us to talk about the NBA Finals. I tell you, today was one of those it was a really nice day here at Federated Media. And we got to thank everybody that got involved, because this afternoon we had a chance kind of to gather as a group, as a team, once again, as a family of Federated Media employees, because the one thing we haven't been able to do over the course of the last, 16 months? We haven't been able to actually get together as an entire organization of employees because of the pandemic. And so today we actually had a chance to all get together, kind of a relaxing afternoon. And of course, right now you've got the groups of guys that are still hanging, having a little bit of extra happy hour time. And it's so fun, Caleb. I feel like we should just turn the show over to them. We should let them come in here, jump on the mics, and let them go ahead and have their debate. Because when you get a group of guys, 5 or 6 guys together that are all having a pretty good time, they're now debating what's on the topic list right now. And I don't know where these topics get started, but it is Michael Jordan's return to the NBA and the Chicago Bulls cost the Pacers blank number of championships. And we've got a debate going right now between two of our employees on whether it is 1 or 2. You say maybe none.
Yeah. I mean, you got the Jazz, who are really, really good. The Rockets got their 2. The Knicks probably would have got 1. I don't know. I mean, the Pacers would have been lucky to have 1.
I don't feel like the Bulls were the obstacle for the Pacers in the 90s. It seemed to me like the rivalry that they had to get over was the Knicks.
Yeah, I mean, the Pacers-Bulls 98 Eastern Conference Finals, I mean, that was one of the best Pacers teams. That, and of course, the two best Pacers teams in NBA franchise history. I'm excluding the ABA, mind you. But the 98 team, which ran into the Last Dance, Jordan Bulls. And then, of course, the 2004 Pacers team with the brawl, that they were on pace for a great season. And then the brawl happened early on. And a lot of people are pretty convinced that that team would have won the championship.
That it imploded based on the brawl.
Yeah.
Well, there were some good years, though, in those late 90s that they just never got it to all click like the Milwaukee Bucks did. And, you know, Milwaukee had a better regular season a year ago. But this year, they figured it out in the playoffs. And sometimes I think you've got to go through the pain to know what it takes to get the glory. And I think the Milwaukee Bucks have learned that. And Giannis Antetokounmpo just decided last night he was not going to let this team lose the opportunity to celebrate an NBA title with their fans. They weren't going to get on a plane. They weren't going to have to go win in Phoenix again. They were going to take care of business last night. And Giannis Antetokounmpo was not just the best player on the floor. He was head and shoulders above everybody else in scoring 50 points. I mean, his number is remarkable. Not just that he scored 50 points, but I like the stat that you brought up earlier, Caleb, that at the free throw line, he finished 17 of 19 at the charity stripe. What a night for Antetokounmpo. He was 16 of 25 from the field. He had 14 rebounds and 50 spot. What a way to celebrate a championship, to put up 50 in the deciding game. Does this go right up there at the top of all-time closeout performances? How close to the top is it?
I mean, you got Jordan, with you mentioned earlier in the first hour, with his 45, Game 6, the 98 Finals against the Jazz. I mean, those are the ones. Now, it's not the only 50-point performance that Giannis had. I think there were 3 others, or he becomes the third. I know
he becomes the third player.
Okay. Rick Barry was 1. I know that. I forget who the others were.
But 50 in a closeout game. Antetokounmpo played 42 minutes and scored 50 points. Now remember, he went into this series not even available to play according to, I mean, he was, wasn't he doubtful for game one and then ended up actually playing game one? He wasn't all that effective in game one, but from game two on, he ended up averaging like 38.5 points per game. He was averaging, I think, 14, 15 rebounds a contest. I mean, just put up incredible numbers and clearly was the MVP of the series. Now, if you talk about the entire playoffs and you actually talk about most valuable, maybe that became Chris Middleton, because without Middleton stepping up against Brooklyn when Giannis was out of the lineup, this Bucks team may have never had their chance to compete for an NBA title against the Phoenix Suns. But the Suns win the first two. Many people were writing off the Bucks and saying it, the Suns were going to win this in four, maybe five, but it was all Suns. It was exposing Milwaukee. Giannis was not the leader that everybody thought he should be. And I mean, so many things were rushed to judgment, in fact, after two games. I'm glad to see what Milwaukee did in bouncing back, because on the Sports Rush, we certainly gave a lot of credit to Milwaukee and said they are not out of this and they have a chance to come back in this series. Honestly, Caleb, I wasn't sure they'd come back and win the series. I certainly didn't expect them to win four straight games, but I wasn't going to write them off because they lost the first two games on the road. Because the next two games, we're going to be in Milwaukee. We're going to completely flip things. I will say this. Last night, did you feel, I don't know how much of the game you watched, but did you feel as you watched the first half that you were watching the exact same game that just was played in Phoenix with role reversal? Because the home team comes out, storms to a big lead, then the other team comes back. It just seems like we're watching the exact same game, but the two teams have flipped roles.
Yeah, I caught most of the fourth quarter, so I didn't watch the first half. But what I did see, it was a time where anytime the Suns would get a little close, the Bucks would make just enough plays to get ahead. It just, again, when the Bucks won game five on the road, to me, that was the end of the series. And going into this, I thought the Suns would win in six because we didn't know Giannis's health going into the series, like you said. The Suns were playing excellent offensive basketball. Chris Paul was playing really well. Booker, of course, and then Ayton really emerged against the Clippers in that series. But something changed after game two. Obviously, home court advantage means something, and I think it meant a lot because not only did Giannis get healthier as the series went on, that hyperextended knee, I mean, that usually sets people out for a couple weeks.
It was a non-factor, yeah. Really, after the first game of the series. It became pretty much a non-factor and wasn't even talked about.
And clearly, Mike Budenholzer made some adjustments defensively because the Bucks really just, I mean, they really throttled the Suns' offense in the final few games. I mean, it's just, it's crazy how the Suns could score at will so easily in the first two games, and then that changed the rest of the series.
Well, part of it rides on the shooting touch of Devin Booker, who was 0 for 7 from three-point land in the game last night. But the part of the game that you missed, Caleb, was that Milwaukee got out to a huge lead after one quarter. They led 29-16 after one quarter of play. And then the Suns outscored the Bucks 31-13 in the second quarter to take a 47-42 lead at halftime. So it was the home team storming out, owning the first quarter, getting the crowd really into it, and then the road team kind of turning around and flipping the script in the second quarter. And credit to Phoenix's defense, they held Milwaukee to 4 points through about 8 minutes of play in the second quarter. That allowed Phoenix then to make up the ground and actually take the lead in the second quarter. The Bucks took advantage in the third and eventually pulled away late to win at 105-98, almost nailed the final score. I said it was going to be in the neighborhood of 104-99, maybe 104-100. Said that on yesterday's show, and it ends up being 105-98. But the uniqueness of that 7-point spread is that I took Phoenix, but I took the alternate spread of +7.5. So I just squeaked by. You took the Bucks -5, and so you were also a winner, and the under ended up playing easily under 222. But it's the Bucks that win the championship last night. We'll talk about it more with Tony East when he joins us coming up in about 10 minutes. Olympics get started in, well, the opening ceremonies will take place in a couple of days. God willing, COVID willing. I mean,
are you convinced the Olympics are going to be completed? I'm not, personally.
I really don't know what's going to happen. Of course, you know, we all know the stories of the athletes and how, well, it's a kind of a social experiment in some ways when the athletes get together.
Why they didn't just push it back to next summer when it was clear that things were
Well, they didn't want to push it again because they'd already pushed it 1 year. They didn't want to have to push it again. The International Olympic Committee is firmly behind playing these games regardless of risk.
Okay, well, I hope
Japan is not nuts about it.
Yeah, well, I hope they pay Japan a lot of money or give them some money back, because when you can't have spectators, you can't really make any money. Granted, you don't host the Olympics to make
money. Well, the money, I think a lot of it comes from
sponsors.
Yes, I see your point. You got ticket sales and stuff, but it comes from sponsorship. It comes from TV deals. And
Toyota.
That's where the real money is generated.
Toyota pulled all their domestic ads, though. For example.
Well, hey, I don't want to get into a debate on whether they should or they shouldn't. What I do want to say, though, is nothing is a given. I think Japan may get into a position where things start to escalate with the COVID outbreak. And it's already happening in their country. The question is, will it start to happen amongst athletes and cost a lot of the athletes a chance to compete? And we've already seen, what, 8 or 9 athletes at least that have been tested positive. We've had the alternate for the U.S. gymnastics team that's tested positive. So, you know, it's already happening. But then on top of it, not only do you have that issue going on, but then you have the U.S. women's soccer team, which is an overwhelming favorite to win the gold, losing. And they actually started competition today and already one match in, and the soccer team is down, to losing to Sweden 3-0. Sweden
ends a 44-match winning streak.
Crazy.
Right?
I mean, we don't lose, and we go there and lose. Unbelievable.
I'm trying to think of the last time they lost. I mean, it would have been the last Olympics, right?
I was going to say it's probably been at least 3 years ago.
Yeah.
In international competition. Yeah, 44 straight, and they lose their first Olympic matchup against Sweden. 3-0. So things aren't going good in the competition. Things aren't going good as far as the COVID goes. There's a battle between Japan and the International Olympic Committee trying to figure out if the game should go on or not go on. International Olympic Committee is standing firmly behind the decision to proceed with the games, while Japan is very concerned whether or not these games can go on and they can maintain health and safety of all the athletes. So it's just, it's a mess. And quite honestly, I love the Olympics. I look forward to the Olympics. I'm not excited about this Olympics at all, because it's kind of like, okay, we'll wait. We'll see who actually competes and who doesn't. I'm not going to get hyped up over something and then be disappointed. So I have not embraced this Olympics like I normally do.
Correct. And to answer my own question, the last loss was January 2019, a friendly in France. So not really a, you know, notable competition game for the U.S. women's national team.
No stakes in it.
Yeah, correct. But yeah, I echo your sentiment on the Olympics. I feel like there is very little buzz about it in the U.S. If you ask the average person on the street, you know, when the Olympics are starting, I bet more than half wouldn't even be able to tell you that they start this weekend.
Well, they
there's
would probably
no buzz.
Say, wait, we have Olympics this year?
Yeah, there's zero buzz.
Yeah. And by the way, we do have a couple of athletes from Fort Wayne, from the Fort Wayne area. Rachel Dinkoff, who's going to be competing in, what is she in? The discus toss. And then you've got Andrea Filler, who is going to be competing for, I believe, Italy in women's softball. So good luck to both of them. Congratulations on making it to the Olympic stage. And we just hope you get a chance to actually compete over there in Tokyo. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. White Sox Wednesday. Don't forget, we're giving you a chance to win today. Coming up in about 15 minutes, we're going to pick a winner. And here's what you have to do. You have to text us on our Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. You've got to text us the answer to today's White Sox question of the day. Which White Sox starting pitcher pitched his high school ball in Indiana? Text the answer to 46862. and we'll randomly select one person who gives us the correct answer, and we'll give you that White Sox Wednesday giveaway package with four tickets to see the White Sox play the Cleveland Indians on Sunday, August 1st. We also have the parking pass to take care of your parking. So go ahead and text the answer to 46862. Tony East, he's the host of Locked On Pacers podcast, and he comes up next here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Last chance to win your White Sox tickets on our White Sox Wednesday. If you know the answer to our White Sox question, text it to us at 46862. Who among the White Sox starting rotation played his high school ball in the state of Indiana? Text the answer to that question to 46862. One correct response will be selected randomly to win our four-pack of tickets to the White Sox versus the Cleveland Indians on August 1st, plus get that parking pass. We're going to do that coming up in about 8 minutes from now. Talking more about the NBA championship won by the Milwaukee Bucks last night, one of the great performances in a closeout game in NBA history. Joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline, you can, of course, follow him. He's got all the inside on the Indiana Pacers, on the Indiana Fever, multiple places that you can find what he writes, but also the Locked On Pacers podcast. It is Tony East. And last night, Tony, we saw the Bucks do something that the Pacers could only dream about, and that's kind of build a small market team around a homegrown superstar and claim an NBA championship. I think this has to be a good thing for the NBA, yes or no?
I would agree with that. It's always good for a sports league when a unique story or unique team-building strategy ends up paying off, right, in this case. You know, the Tampa Bay Devil Race could have been that for baseball a few years ago when they were doing the relief pitching strategies and stuff like that. And for basketball, of course, the Bucks, not necessarily different than other title teams in that, you know, they had the star, they had a secondary star in Chris Middleton, they spent all their chips on a pretty good player in Jrue Holiday. You know, that's a typical talented team to win a title, but they did it differently. You know, they drafted the high-ceiling guy from Europe in Giannis. They took a chance on Chris Middleton after he was only 1 year removed from being a second-round pick. But they did it in a small market. They kept their players happy. They got the right ancillary pieces around those guys. It was really a huge thing for the NBA to see a team like that pull it off on the biggest stage.
And I mentioned earlier in the show, obviously Giannis was the MVP of this series, but perhaps an honorable mention should go to John Horst, the Bucks GM, because I thought some of the pieces and the way he put this team and roster together was pretty genius. I think he deserves a lot of the credit.
Yeah, the way he was able to get Brooke Lopez a few years ago and his value was at its absolute lowest, and then because he got Brooke Lopez for cheap, he was able to re-sign him a few years later. They did something similar with George Hill, who ended up being in a trade, but you know that they got him in a similar way. They drafted DiVincenzo, right? They did a lot of good stuff, and Horst deserves a lot of credit every step of the way to fill out this roster. And you know, they got Jeff Teague for really cheap midseason this year. He didn't provide them a ton in the finals, but a good player who helped them throughout the regular season and playoffs. They found value in Bryn Forbes as a cheap second unit guy. And the big one is obviously Bobby Portis. They got Bobby Portis for extremely cheap. Horst deserves a ton of credit for finding that value, seeking him out on the free agent market after he had a pretty down year with the Knicks last year. So yeah, Horst has done an excellent job building that team, and he deserves a lot of credit for what they accomplished.
Being a smaller market team, what's the pressure now moving forward? Can they keep this group together?
Yeah, they got Giannis to sign the big deal last summer, which was the story of the offseason, basically. And they locked up Middleton 2 summers ago in 2019. Remember, if you want to tie this to the Pacers a little bit, there was some talk because of the luxury tax if they were going to have to pick Malcolm Brogdon or Chris Middleton. They ended up picking Middleton, which clearly looks correct in retrospect. They already locked up Jrue Holiday to his longer deal. So the questions for them going forward will be, you know, how can they keep guys like Brooke Lopez or Jeff Teague, who I just mentioned, or even Portis, who has a player option this summer? Are they willing to pay the luxury tax again to keep those guys? If they're willing to pay the tax, they can keep their team together as long as they want, basically. You know, they've got these guys locked up. I'm sure guys would like to stay on a team that just won a championship, but you know, the luxury tax is always a scary thing. When you win a championship, you have some house money to play with, so we'll see what Milwaukee ownership is willing to do going forward. But if their ownership group is willing to spend, I see no reason why they can't keep a similar group or even an improved group together going forward.
Was this a one-hit wonder for Phoenix? Where did the Suns go from here?
It depends on what happens with Chris Paul, right? They did, you know, injuries certainly helped them get through the West. That said, they had a really good team, right? They won their last 8 games in the bubble last year. And I think going back to that, they had won something like 68 of their last 90 games or something extremely impressive dating back to the bubble. So they're clearly very talented despite, you know, obviously adding Chris Paul will help, but, you know, they're clearly talented outside of him. But his future kind of dictates how they're going to look next year. He's got a player option he'll almost certainly opt out of before he signs his last big contract in the NBA. He's on the higher side of the 30s in age. So for them, it's going to be if they can you know, re-sign him, convince him to stay, how can they get some other ball handling help or even shooting help, just skilled players in general, right? They couldn't really trust a lot of their perimeter guys with the ball, as we could see in the finals. And so, you know, when Booker kind of went away from his teammates or when Chris Paul didn't quite have it some nights, they didn't have enough options to get points. So if they are able to keep Chris Paul, which is likely, they have the means to do so, can they get someone else to really help them and step up and repeat this run? Because if not, you know, it's going to be hard to, right? They got Anthony Davis injured, and then they had Jamal Murray injured, right? It's hard to replicate their good health luck and the bad health luck of other teams. So they got to find ways to get better.
You know, we saw Devin Booker's struggles in Game 6 last night, especially down the stretch. He tried to make plays. He couldn't finish. And you have Giannis just taking over the game at the other end. We talked about this earlier in the show, and it's kind of an interesting thought that right now, if I could give you any player in the NBA and you'd have him up until the age of 31, so for players that are maybe in their mid to upper 20s, you wouldn't have them as long as perhaps some of the NBA stars that are in their younger 20s. But if you had one player in the NBA that you could have right now until the age of 31 to build a team around, what player would it be? Is it hands down Giannis, or is there some idea with the age that maybe you could go to a Luka or a Trae Young or maybe even a Devin Booker?
Yeah, you know, Giannis is certainly most likely, I think, given the playoff run he just had, the dominant finals he had, the dominant series against the Nets he had, right now he would be the best player in the NBA. You have to consider him that. But if you're looking until 31, you have 5 years of Giannis, and he'll be very talented for all of those. But you mentioned Luka, who's in his younger 20s. You'd have him for more time. He'll certainly get better. He'll be, you know, an MVP favorite for years and years and years. Trae Young just got his team to the conference finals. I think that would be a good choice as well. He's only going to get better as well. And now he has Nate McMillan to help him, you know, grow into an NBA point guard. And Joel Embiid might even be a good pick here. A guy you didn't name that I thought would be an interesting choice here is Zion. Zion was spectacular last year, over 27 points a game at age just 21, 22. He's certainly going to get better as, you know, the Pelicans get more ball handlers on their team. So he might be a guy that I'd be interested in picking in this slot as well. But you know, it's really hard to not pick one of Giannis or Luka to me. I mean, they're both top 10 players right now who are both only going to get better in the next couple of years. So until they're 31, I'd have a tough time choosing anyone but one of those two guys.
Zion is kind of an interesting character in this discussion because he's unique in the fact that he isn't a guy that has to have the ball in his hands making plays. I mean, you can alley-oop to him on a drive and dish. You can feed him in the post. You know, there's so many different ways that Zion can score, but rarely is it necessarily lining you up on the perimeter and going one-on-one. Does that make it harder to build a team around a guy like that?
It can be if they kind of lack the skills when he does have the ball. And he's certainly, you know, like the limitations that we've seen from Ben Simmons and Giannis, isn't necessarily a guy who's got the jump shot or even a strong floater to score. But you have to guard him up close even when he doesn't have the ball, just because he can ram through anybody or he can jump over almost anybody, which at his size is absolutely ludicrous to think about. And in the open floor, he's unbelievable. So I think because of his current age and limitations, lesser so than obviously Giannis or Ben Simmons or other guys who can't shoot, you need more ball handlers or shooters next to him than those guys. But I think that in due time, he'll be one of those guys that we think of as just unstoppable with or without the ball, because you have to know where he is and be cutting off all the options at all times.
Pacers, of course, looking for that 13th pick. They had a workout. I think it was it today or was it yesterday? They had some pretty big names come in. I like the list of guys they were working out. What do you expect out of that 13th pick, and who have the Pacers been looking at?
Yeah, that was today. Cam Johnson at LSU, Zaire Williams out of Stanford, Corey Kispert from Gonzaga, and Chris Duarte from Oregon were all in working out at the St. Vincent Center today. And all four of those guys are invited to the green room. And basically how the green room works is those are the guys who you know, are at the draft. They walk up, they get the hat on when they get picked, and teams, you know, vote on the 20 guys they want there, right? So that's the consensus top 20-ish picks. You know, some guys like Usman Garuba, who's playing for Spain in the Olympics right now. He's in Tokyo. He was supposed to be one of the invites, but he couldn't be there. So someone is the 21st guy or something. But it's a rough estimate of the top, let's say, 25 picks in the draft. So to have four of those guys in the building during one workout is certainly interesting. I don't know what the Pacers are necessarily looking for, because there's kind of a lot of options that make sense for them, and this draft provides a lot of them. There's some good ball-handling guards. There's some decent wings. There's even some funky centers, and I don't think the Pacers would pick a center given their team construction, but they could go any position. And then there's some older guys like Duarte and Kispert who are in today who might be a little more NBA-ready right away, but then you also have some younger guys who are really talented like Josh Giddey, Sharif Cooper, any of the top four who might take a little more time to develop but have a higher ceiling. So really, whatever the Pacers decide to do, if they pick a higher floor guy who can contribute a little sooner, which is probably more interesting to a guy like Rick Carlisle, or if they go for a higher ceiling guy, which makes more sense for small market teams, that makes a lot of sense. And there's guys at every position who fill both styles of players. So they have a lot of options, and they've worked out a fair amount of first and second rounders. So I'll be really interested to see what they do, because I have no idea. I don't think anyone does.
Caleb and I talked about this yesterday, about Kispert being kind of a guy that we've both watched play, because Gonzaga had a bunch of time on TV with the NCAA tournament and all. And we were trying to figure out, do we see him as a four? Do you see him as a three in today's NBA game? What would be his role? Could he guard a four? Does he have to guard a three? What, where do you see a guy like that? Because he might be a name that could go anywhere 8, 9. He could drop all the way to 13. Where do you see a guy like that in his NBA future?
Yeah, when you can shoot like Corey Kispert, you probably have a role on an NBA team no matter what, right? Doug McDermott, when he came out of Creighton, and I'm not comparing the two players, I just want to talk about shooting a little. Remember, at Creighton, Doug McDermott was like a three-level scorer and a mid-range killer and all this stuff in the NCAA tournament, but in the NBA, he didn't have the abilities to, you know, drive by guys as much or get his spots in the mid-range, so he just converted all of his offensive time and practice to shooting. And he became an elite shooter, and that allowed him to be an NBA player for a long time and continue to be one. Corey Kispert's already a very good shooter, and I think that that means he'll have a role in the NBA on whatever team picks him, basically for the amount of time he's in the NBA, even if a lot of his other skills, you know, he's pretty athletic. If you watch Gonzaga, I'm sure you saw him dunk. He dunks like twice a game, it feels like, and you know, he's a sneaky good driver. But shooting is, you know, if that's the only thing for him that translates to the NBA, he'll still be good and valuable and close to a lottery-level talent. He mentioned today after his workout that, you know, he tried to declare for the NBA last year and then went back to school so he could work on his defense. That's definitely still a weakness for him. But if the defense comes, I think I'd lean to him being more of a four. And those stretch fours are really valuable in the NBA these days, right? Every team is trying to get forwards who can shoot and stretch the game out. So if he can become a shooter and even defend a little bit in the NBA, yeah, he'll be a lottery pick and be a valuable stretch four. But just because he's got a good floor from shooting alone, I think he's an intriguing prospect for any team.
Absolutely. Always insightful and enjoyable to have a conversation with you, Tony. It's at T East NBA and, of course, Locked On Pacers podcast. Appreciate it, Tony. Thanks.
Thank you for having me.
Tony East joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. We are going to go to the text line and pick our winner for a White Sox Wednesday, and we'll take a break. We'll be back. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Congratulations, Dave. You are our winner of a White Sox Wednesday 4-pack of tickets to see the White Sox take on the Cleveland Indians coming up on August 1st, Sunday afternoon baseball at Guaranteed Rate Field. And we'll get the info to you to get those tickets. But congratulations, Dave. You are a winner. If you didn't win today, we'll do it again next Wednesday. So just remember, every Wednesday, 4-pack of tickets to see the White Sox and a parking pass on White Sox Wednesday from the Sports Rush and 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I don't know, of course, this time of year, Caleb, you've got college football media days. SEC, they spread it out over 3 or 4 days. You've got the MAC that just had their media day yesterday. We had a chance to talk to Coach New on the program, the Ball State Cardinals coach, and of course, Ball State looking to have a great 2021. After winning the MAC championship last year, they're going to return 20 of their 22 starters. 16 of them are super seniors that are coming back for that extra year of eligibility. What a talented group down at Ball State. Now, They also had the media day for Deion Sanders. Who does he coach? Jackson State? Is it Jackson?
Yeah, I think it's Jackson State.
Jackson State. A team that probably would have gotten very little ink out of their media day. They were 4-3 last year, probably picked to be somewhere middle or upper part of the conference this year. But, of course, Neon Deion figured out a way to get national exposure for his football team by taking offense to a reporter who addressed him by using his first name. Shameful. He addressed him and said, Deion. Immediately, Deion Sanders said, whoa, whoa, whoa. You've got to show me some respect. You don't address me by Deion. I am Coach Sanders. Or, as he wants to be known from now on, Coach Prime. He said, you would not address Nick Saban that way. You would not call him Nick. Well, here's the ironic part of this story, is when Nick Saban appeared in front of reporters at SAC Media Day, I believe it was like 9 times reporters addressed him with a question and started it with Nick. And he never said a thing. But Deion made this all about himself and that he was feeling disrespected. He says, you have to demand respect. And I think, no, you don't demand respect. Respect is something that you earn. And it's not disrespectful to call somebody by their first name. It's their name. Now, if you referred to them as a nickname, maybe it's a nickname they don't like. I know there's formalities that sometimes you would call somebody Mr. Sanders, or you would perhaps not use a first name with somebody until you're comfortable or feel like you know somebody on a, quote, first-time basis. But things have gotten a little more casual over the last few years in America. I don't know if you've noticed, but the business approach in America, we don't have as many suit wearers, more people with polos or monogrammed or logoed polos. There's not as many suit and ties. You know, we do refer to people a lot with their first name. I don't think what the reporter did was disrespectful. Now, the only thing the reporter did that probably he could have avoided was when Deion went into the fact that he shouldn't address him by calling him Deion. The reporter, after taking a little bit of a lashing, came right back and said, okay, Deion, and called him Deion a second time, which then caused Deion Sanders to get up and march out of Media Day and not answer anyone's questions. Now, there's a couple of things going on here. First of all, it's not just all about the coach, and that's really what we're focused on here. But for a guy like Deion Sanders to bring attention to his program, if he would have sat there and respectfully answered every reporter's question for who knows how long, 45 minutes or an hour, he would have gotten a nice little write-up in about 6 or 7 Southern papers, probably some smaller papers, and no one nationally would have taken note. What a genius that Deion is. By causing this stir and causing this controversy and getting up and walking out in the middle of this reporter's question, he now gets people nationally to all talk about him, his program, and bring awareness to what he's doing as a coach now in his, what, second year at Jackson State. So, I mean, I don't know if it's intentional or not, but it certainly got the national write-ups and got exactly what probably is best for him, which is national exposure for a small program.
And I think that's exactly why this was done. He went off. He found a way for people to be talking about him, Jackson State. He already has some big recruits coming in. And we saw how much the spring season helped the FCS because it kind of put them on the map, you know, without the FBS getting in the way. And so now, Jackson State football, Deion Sanders, I mean, it gets a lot of attention. And to me, it was a marketing ploy.
Speaking of football, I think this is interesting. The story that we talked about earlier in the show, Oklahoma and Texas, apparently closer than we realize in becoming members of the Southeastern Conference, leaving the Big 12 behind and becoming full members of the SEC. So I guess the obvious question when you think about Oklahoma and Texas, two pretty powerful programs, football and basketball, baseball, they've got multiple sports where they're very strong athletically, joining an already strong group of football teams in the Southeastern Conference. Question is, where does it leave the Big 12? Where does that conference go? Does it try to solicit new members? Does it just accept the two teams leaving? From a financial standpoint, what does it mean to the other members of the conference? Does an Iowa State all of a sudden start to look at opportunities maybe in a Big Ten? I mean, will the Big 12 survive without their two marquee members? I mean, those are the two biggest programs, best programs the Big 12 has, right? If you lose them, what do you have remaining?
Don't be surprised if this does indeed go through in the next couple of weeks, which is what a report I saw said. If Texas A&M tries to bolt and go elsewhere because they want nothing to do with Texas.
Now that would be interesting.
I'm not saying the Big 12 will survive, but some iteration of a lot of those teams could form a new conference and just have a new name. I mean, look, the problem with the Big 12 is, one, it's 10 teams. Two, the only teams that matter are Texas and Oklahoma. And then the third and most importantly, they don't have a...
It's not the only teams that matter. They're the strength of the conference.
But there's no depth, I guess, is what I'm saying.
I mean, you could argue that the Iowa States and the Oklahoma States have had their success, but truly, the revenue producers.
And they don't have a Big 12, you know, network, so to speak. That's the real issue.
Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't have a real appeal.
Correct.
To go out and pitch without Oklahoma and Texas. And the one thing that stopped them from getting a deal, I think, is that Texas created their own deal with the Longhorn Network.
Which has been a massive, massive failure compared to what they thought it would be.
And I wonder if it would disappear once they become members of the Southeastern Conference. 46862, Parkview Sports Madison text line. We're just, 3 weeks away from our treetops rooftop party. We hope that you come out and join us for Tin Caps Baseball, high above right field in that treetop section. You know, those special bleachers up by the scoreboard. You're always wondering, what are those people doing up there? How did they get up there? How did they get tickets? What's happening up there? Because they seem to all be having a really good time. Well, we're going to let you experience that because we've got tickets available for you to join us for our own little party with 1380 The Fan, The Sports Rush, and Glenbrook Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram. Here's the deal. You go to 1380thefan.com. You go to the link that sends you to ticketing for the Tin Caps. You can buy a ticket. The ticket will include your seating in the treetop section with us on Thirsty Thursday, August 12th. But it's also going to include a full all-you-can-eat buffet. So you've got your food provided for the night. You've got beer included. Draft beer will be available. You've got wine that will be included. For those of you that like the wine or want to make it a full date night, bring out the significant other, you can do that. We'll also have T-shirts that commemorate the event. So you'll all get a special T-shirt talking about the treetops party and the fact that you were there. So if you want this special shirt, you want the all-inclusive ticket, you go to 1380thefan.com, click on the link for the Sports Rush Party with me. I'll be hosting it out there. Caleb will be joining us. That is Thursday, August 12th, but tickets are limited. So you got to jump in and get these while they're hot right now at 1380thefan.com. Big thanks to Glenbrook Dodge Chrysler Jeep Ram and the Tin Caps, plus, of course, all the proceeds for the tickets will go to Cancer Services of Northeast Indiana. So it's all for a good cause as well. That's Thursday, August 12th. Get your tickets now. Join us. Don't miss out. Tickets limited. And get them on the website right now to join us for our Tin Caps Treetops Party. Should be a fun time down at Parkview Field. And, of course, kind of celebrating the fact that we can all get together again, get a chance to meet people face-to-face, something we haven't been able to do. In fact, be quite honest, most of the gatherings that we've had when we've been face-to-face, we've only been able to see half your face. Has it been embarrassing? Have you had embarrassing moments, by the way, Caleb? I've had a number of embarrassing moments where people have come up to me and started talking to me, and I don't know them by just their eyes. I'm almost like, pull the mask down so I know who I'm talking to. Have you had, somebody at the store that talked to me, two, 3 weeks ago. It was a store that required masks. They had their mask on. I had my mask on. They knew who I was. I have no idea who I talked to. They're probably listening to this show right now thinking, that jerk, he talked to me like he knew who I was. But I had no idea who it was.
Yeah, there are times I've seen someone or been out and about and someone I should have recognized, several months ago and idea who it was. I couldn't tell.
No, I don't know you just by your eyes. I need to see more of your face, Bill. So this will be that opportunity coming up on August 12th. We hope to hang out with you. Do not miss out. The last thing I want is one of our fans that listens to the show, wants to come out and hang out with us for a couple of hours, wants to win some prizes, get the t-shirt, everything else, have them not be able to get the ticket because the tickets have sold out. So this is kind of a rare opportunity because normally you can't go buy individual tickets to go sit in that section. You have to be part of a group. Well, we are the group and we're inviting you to then buy the tickets to be part of our group. $49.50 is all it costs, and that's the all-inclusive food buffet, the beer, the wine, the t-shirt, the whole deal. That comes up on Thursday, August 12th. We'll take a quick time out. We're going to cut back. We'll put a wrap on this thing on a Wednesday edition of the Sports Rush coming up next. Did catch baseball tonight at Parkview Field. They'll try to turn it around against the Dayton Dragons after Dayton took game one of the six-game series last night, 4-1. An Augustine Ruiz home run, the only offense for the Tin Caps. That's been their problem over the last few days, was there's been a few games where the offense has stalled. We mentioned at West Michigan, they had the doubleheader where they played 14 innings of baseball, had only two hits, got no hit in the second game of the twin bill, and did not score a run. Well, that's a pretty tough day at the ballpark. And last night, if it was not for Augustine Ruiz hitting his 11th home run of the season, the Tin Caps would have been shut out on the board last night. So hopefully the offense gets in gear tonight. Danny Dens is going to get the start on the mound, and Mike Maz will warm up the vocal cords and have all of the action from Parkview Field tonight, starting with the Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show at 6:45. First pitch coming your way at 7:05 right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. I'll be back in the Tin Cash broadcast booth coming up this weekend. I'll join Mike Maz for the wrap-up of this series against the Dayton Dragons. Big thanks to our guests that appeared on the show today, Mark Davidson. I tell you, it's always touching to hear his story and the challenges that he is going through personally with his health issues. And we certainly wish and hope and pray for Mark Davidson and his recovery from this battle against cancer. But it's a big honor for him to be named the Indiana High School Coach of the Year. That's all sports in the state of Indiana. Also, a big thanks to Tony East, who joined us earlier this hour. If you miss any of the show, catch up with the podcast. Available wherever you listen to podcasts, just search for us by going to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump. We'll be back tomorrow for a Thursday edition right here on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.